Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hi, everyone. This is Amy. Today, before we start the episode, Melissa and I just wanted to give a disclaimer that there is some disturbing content in this episode. Also, stay tuned after the podcast to listen to a trailer for a podcast because you know what it's like when you've listened to everything in your library. Thanks.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down Rabbit Holes Podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And how was your week?
It was good. How was yours?
You know, I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, I hear you. It's been crazy. And we have been so busy trying to get you guys out great content that we're loving it. The more of you that listen, the more emails we get and the more, you know, social media we get, which we try to respond to every single one of you. So, yeah. The case, I just want to dive in, okay?
Please do.
So, the case I'm talking about today is actually, it's more public than we normally cover. And I don't mean that, like, we've covered, like, the Springfield 3 and things like that. So, like, I don't mean like that. But this case is actually one of the ones that really comes in the forefront of, the, like, the missing white girl syndrome epidemic.
Yeah, why don't you explain that for a sec?
Sure. It is very well known in the media that if a white female, typically attractive, goes missing, everyone and their brother covers the story. But if a non-Caucasian female goes missing, it is less covered. There is less information out there. And it's led to sort of an epidemic on the disproportionality of how our media covers things.
And it's really, frankly, disgusting because I've intentionally looked for cases that don't fit into this epidemic, if you will. And it's sad. It's been challenging. It breaks my heart for families that can't get the coverage because of something like the color of their skin.
Right. And, you know, like, and not to get into a sidebar of, like, how we research cases, but, like, we aren't trying to tell you the story in a, you know, a disappeared episode 2-hour format.
Agreed. I'm also not, like, a trained journalist or investigator that has, like, a network program or anything. I'm just little old me.
Right. So, you know, we obviously we spend time and energy researching, but like we don't pull police files. You know, we don't go to the courthouse and read documents. We don't get down to that level. So, yes, I mean, there are going to be times we miss things, first of all. And we own that.
100%.
We don't try to pretend that we know everything about everything. Second of all, we not that we gravitate toward, but it's. There's more in data and information out there on the cases the media has covered at length. So it sort of pigeonholes us, too. And like Amy said, we have purposely looked for cases that aren't. But here we are.
Right. I mean, I think that's really well said. And you notice there might be a lot less information if you go look yourself on some of these cases. But that's our goal. Like we've said that from day one. Like we want to talk about, you know, kind of the lesser known cases. And if we don't have the answers, you know, we want you to feel like you can go to Google and you can look at this stuff and find out this information. The point is, if one person looks and finds information, they pass it on to a friend or somebody else. And at some point, people are talking about it. I mean, perfect example, Maura Murray. And I've said this before, but like, if people didn't continue telling her story, it wouldn't have been a big thing, because when she first disappeared, no one really knew about it outside of people in New Hampshire, her friends, family, etc.
Exactly.
Done.
And like, another thing too is like, when you Google something, you may find something that we didn't say. It doesn't mean we didn't read it on Google. We just aren't comfortable saying things we can't corroborate. Mm-hmm. So you may find something and go, oh my goodness, why didn't they say that? Well, hang on. We probably didn't want to because it was very speculative, or it was very leading in one direction or another. And we decided to like, okay, we can't corroborate that. So let's just put it to the side. And sometimes we do, but we want you to do your own research too. But now we have talked for far too long, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Tell me about this case, because I do know it's popular, and I can tell you that I didn't follow it, so I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so as I'm like researching this case, my cousin is probably going to disown me for this one, mm-hmm. but that's fine, because my cousin is 21, in college, and reading the story I'm about to tell you today, all I could think of was her and her friends and the stupid things she Snapchats me at 2 o'clock in the morning when they're out.
Aw, Mom.
Yeah, for real. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, okay. So tonight we're going to talk about Lauren Spearer. I'm going to give you a quick her background, but this case has some twists and turns, so I want to jump in. She was born in January of 1991. Her parents are Charlene and Robert. She grew up in Scarsdale, New York. And for reference, I looked up the median income in Scarsdale. The median household income is $250,000.
Oh, okay. Doing well.
So she was pretty active in her Jewish faith. And she actually went away to summer camp over the summers in high school called Camp Tawanda. Now, I looked up this camp because it's mentioned multiple times, and according to their website, it's an independent, traditional, co-ed sleepaway camp in the northeast Poconos Mountains.
Sounds dreamy.
I was gonna say, like, living the dream for a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So, she actually met a boy there, who became her boyfriend.
As they do.
Right. And I actually wrote in my notes, I know, shocker. And she made a really good friend also. So Jesse Wolf was her boyfriend, and her friend was Jay Rosenbaum. They'll come into play after.
Okay.
But it did sound like, based on like the media attention for this case, a lot of kids from that camp went to Indiana University, which is where Lauren ended up going.
So she grew up in New York. She goes away to camp in the Poconos, which is Pennsylvania, right?
Yes.
But she goes to college in Indiana, is that correct?
Yes. It sounds like a lot of kids from the area in New York she went to this camp. And a lot of them went to the same, like, colleges. Even though it was, like, 12 hours away, mm-hmm. Like, her entire friend group ended up there.
Okay. Just following the lines.
Yeah. Now, I do also want to mention that Lauren had a medical condition. She has long QT syndrome.
Wait.
Which I didn't even...
I've heard of that.
Seriously?
I just read an article about it the other day.
Okay, well, I use the Mayo Clinic because I didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
Do you want to explain it or do you want me to?
No, I don't remember it, but I read just something on Instagram the other day, so...
Well, it's a heart condition that can cause fast and chaotic heartbeats, and it might trigger a fainting spell or a seizure, and the heart can beat erratically for so long you can actually pass away from it. That's a baseline of who Lauren is. She was a great kid. She graduated. She got into Indiana University, or IU. She was majoring in textiles, which I actually know because I know people have done it. It's fashion, essentially. It's like getting ready for a career in fashion.
Oh.
There is one thing I want to talk about. Lauren, a lot of the coverage focuses on the fact that Lauren was drinking. And sure, could she have made better decisions? Probably so.
I mean, that's a book that someone should write, and it should be distributed to 21-year-olds.
Well, she was 20, exactly. And that's my point. Like, I put in the notes, like, Lauren had drinks this evening, quite a few. And it is what it is. I'm not going to get on my high horse and be like, you shouldn't drink till you're 21, and then you should only drink what your body can. Everyone has done it. You know, everyone has gone through it. It is what it is. I do want to mention, though, that on September 2nd, 2010, which is 9 months before her disappearance, she was arrested for public intoxication and illegal consumption, which is what you get arrested for in college. Like, let's be real.
Got it.
You know, so it is what it is. The thing with this story that makes me crazy is there are so many players involved and no answers. And there's surveillance photos and they've been verified by the police. And there's video and it's been verified by the police. And then there's just, we don't know. So we're going to go the night of June 2nd into June 3rd of 2011.
Okay.
On June 2nd, Lauren goes out drinking with friends. Yes, she was 20. Like I said, it is what it is. 20-year-olds drinking college towns. So, Thursday, June 2nd, Lauren has drinks. It, very clearly, based on the story, it's quite a few drinks. There are two really good timelines out there. Both are from the Indiana police. So I'm going to just reference, I'm going to use the USA Today's one as a base. A lot of the next, like, dates and times will come from them, but keep in mind, they got it directly from the police website. Mm-hmm. So, just after midnight on June 3rd, so we're in the early morning hours of June 3rd, 2011, Lauren leaves her apartment in Smallwood Plaza with a friend named David. Her boyfriend, who lives in a different apartment, doesn't want to go out this evening because he's watching the NBA Finals.
Okay.
But he says him and Lauren had texted on and off and she was going out. Her and David meet with other friends at Jay Rosenbaum's townhouse, which, if you recall, is one of her friends from camp.
Yes.
They're also, he lives down the hall from Corey Rossman and Mike Beth.
All right.
Now, down the hall, as you, if you guys didn't live at college, down the hall means absolutely nothing. Like, everyone on your hall is who you talk to. They all end up, like, chatting or whatever. Around 1:30 a.m., Corey Rossman and Lauren walk to Kilroy's Sports Bar. At 1:46 a.m., they enter the sports bar. This is all on video. And they stay for 41 minutes. Now, apparently, Amy, we lived in the wrong college town. Because this bar, it was a beach bar. Now, they're in Indiana, so right, there's no beach. But they have, like, a sand pit with, like, chairs. You can just, like, hang out. Kick your shoes off.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. And
so between this place and the Ugly Tuna Saluna, why did we not have fun college bars?
I need to go. If that's a real place, I will book a flight just to go to the Luna Tuna. What is it?
Ugly Tuna Saluna.
I will book a flight.
Brian Schaefer case,
will go.
Y'all don't know that.
Yes, and I will go there, and I will have lunch, and I will fly back home just to say that I did it.
Amy, they're known for their $1 Jello shots, not lunch.
Well, I'm a little too old for that. Can't do that.
All right. Either way, the only reason I mentioned this sand pit, aside from the fact that I'm really jealous about it, is when they leave Kilroy's around 2:11 a.m., Lauren leaves without her shoes.
Okay, so why?
I think that, and she also left without her phone. My thoughts are she took them off and got too drunk to remember to put them back on.
So, I mean, I get it. Like, this is the sand. The
yes.
Place is the sand. I can understand.
Right. So, but that should give you a good indication of, like, her sobriety level at that point.
Right.
So, from 2:30 to 2:42 a.m., they go into Smallwood, which is another student housing. And Corey, the guy she's with, gets in a physical confrontation with a group of young men.
Oh?
Like, a fist fight in the hallway.
Okay.
Corey is hit on the head, splitting his lip, and he... And this will make everyone crazy later, but, like, he says he doesn't recall anything else from this evening.
Yes, because he got into a physical altercation.
And he was drunk.
And he was drunk. So, makes sense.
It's also at this place that Zach Oakes is a passerby, and he notices how intoxicated Lauren is, and he asks if she's okay. And apparently she's fine, but her and Corey want to get out of there as fast as they can because I know he just got in a fight.
Yeah.
So from 2:48 a.m. to 2:51 a.m., cameras on the north-south alley of the apartment complex have Lauren and Corey walking toward the 5 North townhomes, which is where Corey lived.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I'm following.
Now, security cameras on nearby apartments show them coming out of the alley at 2:51 a.m. and walk toward an empty parking lot. Now, Lauren's keys and purse were found in this alley.
So her shoes and her phone are at the bar.
Yes.
And now her keys and her purse are in the
alley.
Alley. Got it.
Now, according to investigators, this surveillance video, she is stumbling and falling and can't really walk straight.
And that's clear on video.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Lauren and Corey get back to Corey's apartment shortly after. Mike, Corey's roommate, was at the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Mike says Corey literally walked in the door and threw up.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I mean, aside from the fact that he probably has, like, something wrong with him from this fight, he's also drunk.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So, Mike puts Corey in bed and then tries to persuade Lauren to sleep over because she's very clearly intoxicated.
Yeah, and if she leaves, she's alone, which right. is a recipe for disaster.
Well, welcome to what happens next.
Oh, no. Duh.
So, she says, no, I want to go home. So then Mike calls Jay, Lauren's friend, who lives two doors down. And is like, I imagine, come get your drunk friend.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Your drunk friend is here. She's going to leave. You need to come get her.
Yep.
Mike says that Lauren wanted to, like, keep partying and kept being like, Mike, why don't you walk me home and then we can drink at my place? And, wow. And Mike was like, it's 3:30 in the morning. No.
Right.
She eventually walked herself two doors down to Jay's apartment, where he actually saw a bruise under her eye.
Oh.
And she says, like, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's assumed that she was drunk and fell and hit her head, whatever.
That was my first thought.
So, two calls are placed from Jay's phone. Jay says Lauren placed both of them. One is to David, who she started the night with, and I have no idea where he went at that point. And then one to another friend. No one answered these calls. I don't know, because it's almost 4 a.m. at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And no messages were left. At 4:30 a.m., Jay reports seeing Lauren leaving his apartment, walking east on 11th Street toward College Avenue. She's barefoot, wearing black leggings and a white shirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last time anyone ever sees Lauren.
Well, I hate you.
So, the next morning, her boyfriend texted her. Police don't release this information in this text, but I assume it's a normal, like, hey, how was night last night?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I want to joke about it. Like, are you alive? Because, like, I think about, like, if I knew some in college, people going out super late drinking, being like, how you feeling this morning? But, like, that's legitimately the question he should have been asking her in a really sobering way.
Yes.
So he actually gets a text back from the employee at the bar that says, nope, her phone's here. I'm going to tell you.
Right.
The next thing we get is her parents saying they got the call that she was missing, but that happens at dinner time. So my assumption is, and there's not a whole lot of what happened that day. So my assumption is he spent that day social mediaing, talking to her friends, her roommate, trying to figure out if someone had seen her before he sounded the alarms and called her parents.
Well, I can see that. Yeah.
If she was out with a bunch of people, and everyone says, yeah, I saw her. Yeah, I saw her. Yeah, I saw her. So eventually you're going to keep calling people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of what happened. So her parents get the call that no one can find Lauren. And it's probably been about 12 hours at this point. And her parents do what I would assume well-to-do parents would do, is get on a plane.
Yes.
You know, it's not like they had any financial limitations as to how quickly they get there.
This is true.
You know, they just get on a plane. And I was listening to, I watched a couple different documentaries on this, and I'm not sure which one had it, but one of them said, like, people from their town just book flights to come help look.
Wow.
Which is, like, it's just amazing. That was June 3rd, early morning hours into the evening. June 4th, the Bloomington Police Department make a statement and says, yes, she's missing. They search the city using canine units. The next day, the police sit down with her parents and say, like, okay, yes, she's missing. Basically, what's our strategy at this point?
Yeah.
Her parents do like, the only media update on day four, which is June 6th, is it's under investigation. June 7th, which is the fifth day she's missing, they host their first press conference and release the dates and times in the surveillance video. Where she was, how they saw her, what was seen, things like that.
Yeah.
They also serve a warrant on the apartment complex. And they take computer towers, pictures of rooms interiors, and all surveillance photos in the apartment. It says that I broke in to the security room. I don't know why it wasn't a, sure, you need all of our videos and you have a subpoena, here it is.
Right,
but yeah. But it doesn't sound like it was a positive interaction.
Mm.
Now, on day 6, which is June 8th, they do another press conference and they say, yes, we have surveillance. And that's when they come out and they say, we were denied access to each room. They wanted to go into, like, each of the dorm rooms and take photos of, like, of the players, basically, like, anyone that was involved.
I see.
And they were denied access by the school. So police wouldn't anyway. They were like, no, we have a subpoena. Like, you don't get a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They denied access even after they had their warrant, so they forced their way in. The police also say at this point that the city has been searched, and they are expanding into surrounding areas. Then the next morning is when the news breaks that Corey got in that fight. And police come out and say, Lauren wasn't involved, first of all. Second of all, we're not prepared to talk about the incident, but we're aware of it, essentially.
Okay.
The fight that Corey got in. I think that what they're saying is it wasn't related and they didn't think it was related. So they're saying, like, yes, we know what happened. Yes, we know who's involved. Lauren was not involved. So sort of don't spin your wheels on that.
Mm. All right.
They also says there are roughly 10 persons of interest at this point, but no suspects. And of the persons of interest, all the boys Lauren saw that evening hired lawyers.
Oh, really? Oh, well,
which,
you know our stance on that.
Well, hold on. They also come from really well-to-do families.
Yeah. So no suspects, just persons of interest.
Yeah, and I think the persons of interest are basically all the people she was out with that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And her boyfriend. Police announced that they're going to put the case on America's Most Wanted for visibility only. Not because they have someone, not because of any of that. They just want the visibility. Also, Corey's, the guy that got in a fight, his attorney comes forward this day and says that his client has met with police, and that's that. No more information. The next day, which is June 11th, now we're 9 days in, the police actually ask local businesses to submit any video footage of the streets of the night Lauren went missing.
Great. Did we get anything?
No.
Oh.
On day 11, and this is all, just so you know, this is a really good timeline to you. A lot of this is coming from, and I'm just going to say, Indiana Daily Student. They made a really good bullet point of, like, the investigation. So I'm just using some of what they have and what's corroborated other places, but I want to credit them for this. Police say there is a vehicle that goes by Lauren slowly, apparently.
Oh.
And, you know, they say, we're waiting for, you know, if anyone has the information, please come forward. Day 17, Indiana State Police surf wooded area of north of Bloomington. Nothing comes up. They also search a landfill, and Lauren's parents went and watched the search.
That is
horrifying.
Beyond belief, yeah.
Can you imagine standing there and, like, I mean, it's got to be surreal.
If they had found her.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be hoping they find nothing, but hoping they find something. You know, it's one of those, like, I don't want her to, but I do want her to because I want answers, but I don't want it to be this.
Right.
And then it was a lot of, like, normal investigation, just following up on tips. The police did track down the white truck, and which is the vehicle I said we saw.
Yeah.
And they essentially have ruled it out.
They did? Really?
Yeah, it was a construction worker on the way to work. Another person drove a white truck in the area that has, people have, you know, said, oh, well, it could be this and it could be this. If the police are comfortable saying we interviewed the person and I ruled it out, like, I don't want to dwell on it.
I agree. I mean, unless we're talking about Don.
Right. Fair. Now, what I will say, however, is they hire private investigators and an investigation firm. And the investigation, and then, you know, a few months go by, and we don't really hear a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And then, don't get me wrong, we haven't heard a whole lot since then. But the investigator does a interview with, I think it's GMA, Good Morning America.
Yeah.
And he refers to the police as Gomer Pyle, which is the auto mechanic, like, doofy person on the Andy Griffith Show, which I only know because my parents watch that show. He's like a kind of like not smart mechanic. And he refers to the police as that. And the police sort of fire back at him and say, like, oh, okay, you can call us that all you want, but, like, we're not going to still share our active investigation notes with the PI. It's not going to happen. So you can say we screwed it up, and that's fine, but he actually, the sheriff says, I've been called worse.
I am sure he has.
So that's sort of the end of where we left off with Lauren Spear. It's like, what? There's a nothing since then?
It's kind of my question. Like, there's...
No. So, there hasn't been a whole lot. I mean, sure, there's been, like, speculation, and there's been, you know, people think this happened, or this happened, or this happened, which we'll get into in the theory section, but there's not a whole lot that has happened. She literally left the guy's house at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
At 4:30. And has never been seen again.
That's really scary.
It's really scary. It's why, like, it scares me for my cousin. Because, like, she was out with her guy friends.
Yeah.
You know, like Lauren knew these guys. And not knew them, like, just met them in college. She knew them back in high school.
Yeah. It's just scary, the whole thing. But to know that she did not have the wherewithal and she's walking alone out there is so alarming.
Like you said, my husband secretly loves this stuff. And we were watching a documentary. And he was like, why did he let her leave his house by herself?
Yeah, Anthony.
And I was like,
why?
So we'll talk about theories for a second. And I mean, when we talk about theories, then we talk about suspects.
All right.
So we'll talk about her boyfriend first. No one reported seeing him out. He stayed home and watched the NBA finals. His roommate said, we watched the NBA finals and went to bed at 2:30 a.m.
Doesn't sound unusual.
Except for he only talked to police once and has never done a media interview. Right. And his thing was, and I mean, a lot of them said they didn't trust the police in their college town, and they just wanted to do their own thing. And, you know, and like, it's a double-edged sword because we both say we'd get lawyers too.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, we're like, oh, they got lawyers. Super suspicious.
Yeah.
I don't really think the boyfriend was involved.
No criminal history either, right?
No. Nope. And no issues in their relationship. Although my husband was like, well, why was she out with other guys till 4 in the morning? And I was like, okay, Anthony, like, I also feel like Her boyfriend probably knew these guys. At least Jay, because they knew each other in high school.
Sure. And I know that their high schoolers have friend groups, so the same thing in college.
Her family says until they have, like, you know, proof that that's what he was doing, they don't want to rule him out. And I understand that because, like, it's their kid. But on the flip side of it, like, in my opinion, he has the best alibi.
Yeah.
The next possible theory, and I'll kind of go through them all with you and you can talk through them, is, like, this friend group or Jay alone did something to her. Now, it falls into one of two camps. They did something to her purposefully, which it is what it is, or something happened and apparently a normal reaction is to hide the body. Because I feel like this conversation comes up enough that I'm like, I don't understand this at all. Hmm. But hey, whatever. You know, one of the theories is I will say this now. When police searched her room, they found a small amount of cocaine in her belongings. Now, there's no evidence she did cocaine that evening. There's no... I think one of the boys did say they thought she did.
I don't know how much this matters, but I've had clients of mine in the past use cocaine when they were drinking to sober up. So I don't know if that would match her behaviors that night anyway. Everyone responds to substances differently. I get that. I'm just saying that I know people take it so they can continue to drink. So
that's fair. And I will tell you this, her parents have made the accusation they think that she was drugged at the bar.
Well, I mean, stranger things have happened. It's a very common thing.
And not only that, like, that explains to me, like, and I guess I don't know how drunk a college kid can get, like, to leave your shoes at a bar.
To be honest with you, I'm more surprised she left her phone.
It was 2011, though, so, you know, the need to be attached to your phone was a little bit different back then.
I don't think it was. There was still Instagram and Facebook. We're texting. It was prevalent.
All right. So her parents say she could have been drugged at the bar. And now we'll tell y'all that I'll fill you in. I just called my 21-year-old cousin who is, you know, lives at college with all of her college roommates that go out to the bars. And I said, hey, a girl goes to a bar and gets drunk and there's a sand pit. And she takes her shoes off and she walks and forgets her shoes at the bar and walks home. And she literally went, okay.
Yeah.
It did not even faze her a little bit. So I guess Amy and I are really old.
Yeah.
And that's less concerning.
I guess so. What do I know?
I mean, that right? That was her reaction, correct?
She goes, okay. And we were like, that's not weird to you. She goes, I guess maybe.
Yeah, nothing. Either way. So her parents think she could have been drugged at the bar, which for me explains the shoes. Apparently that's not abnormal. But, you know, hey, whatever. But my issue with that is, okay, let's say she's drugged at the bar. All the events happen throughout the evening. What happens at 4:30 in the morning?
Right.
So I guess my question for you is at this point, like, what are your thoughts?
I don't think that she walked into, I don't know, the forest or something like that, you know, in a drunken stupor. I think she met with foul play. And I don't necessarily think it's her friends or her boyfriend or anything. They don't have a criminal history. If something was really wrong with her, like, I don't know, an overdose or whatever, I think their response being much less inebriated would be to call 911.
Well, she doesn't have a phone.
No, I understand that.
So you mean like one of the guys she's with?
I don't really hear anything that makes me think anything would have been worth them, I don't know, like hiding her body?
And that's sort of the way I feel too. Now, I will say both police and her parents allude to the fact that they think she's passed.
I could see why.
Now, I do also want to point out her parents sued two of the men who were with her that night. And the case was thrown out because there was not enough evidence that the two men were connected to her disappearance.
I can see why they did it. And I'm sure they have additional reasons, but at the same time,
it was speculated that they did it to compel testimony because all the guys got lawyers.
So a strategic move.
Yeah. So if they sue them, they can deposition them.
I see.
And if they can deposition them, they get statements.
I see. Clever.
Which it's super smart, right?
Yeah.
Also, her mom has given like a really moving statement, and I want to read part of it because she's right. So she says in her statement, "To those responsible, you've moved on. We have not. We will never give up. There will always be someone actively working to find you. Someone is always looking for you. How ironic. Just like as we are looking for Lauren, we are just as diligently looking for you. I have to believe that someday you will let your guard down. You will need to share your truth, and it will just be too big for the person you told to keep it to themselves. That's what we hope for."
Wow, pretty profound.
Yeah. Like, I was like, get him.
Seems like a crime of convenience. They see an inebriated female, disoriented, walking, alone. No one's around. Perfect opportunity. And likely took her, whether she lived or not, I don't know.
So a lot of people think that, like, she wandered off and could have passed away on her own because of her heart condition and the drinking and the drugs or whatever. But my challenge with that is, okay, where's the body?
Yeah, how far would an inebriated female have gotten at 4 in the morning?
With no shoes.
Without, you know, passing out somewhere or whatever. She just couldn't have gone that far.
I mean, I agree with you. Now, you know, like you just said, one of the theories is that Lauren is the ideal target for an abduction. And they say that if a car pulled up next to her, it would have taken them like 10 seconds to get her into the car.
Okay.
Now, I want to point out that in the year after Lauren's disappearance, 10 bodies were found in a 100-mile radius.
Shut the front door.
None of them were her. But what?
That's telling in and of itself.
Like, I was like, wait a second, hold on. Because they were like, oh, they found this body, and they called her parents, and they said it wasn't them. And then it was this body, and they called, it wasn't them. What? Could you imagine being her parents and, like, once a month getting a phone call that they found a body, and then, no, it's not her.
What a roller coaster.
Then I want to talk about this other random person.
There's more?
Oh, there's so more.
No.
So there's a person, Corey Hammersley, who was an inmate at Indiana State Prison.
Oh, here we go.
And he once was an athlete at Indiana University. A year after Lauren's disappearance, he had a meltdown while he was on drugs. He, ready for this?
No. But you're going to tell me.
Walked outside of his apartment with nothing on but a hat.
Oh, poor kid.
With a firearm. And opens fire into a house.
Okay.
He also shot up the police when they came to arrest him.
Sounds very disturbed.
While he's in jail, another inmate and him were playing cards, and they were doing like a special on Lawrence's disappearance like X number of years later. And he looked up at the TV and nonchalantly turns back to the playing cards, and he's like, yeah, I know the guys that did that.
I don't know.
And the guy was like, wait, what? And he's like, yeah, like, it was a house party with a group of kids, and they were drinking, and she OD'd, and it scared them, and because she was under 21 and they were doing drugs, they took her body down to the Ohio River and dumped her.
Because drugs are legal at 21? What? No.
So one of the reasons, and this is actually in one of the episodes I watched too, is like, the investigator says, like, a lot of times the simplest version is the right one, and we try to complicate it. And this is really simple. She died accidentally at a party, and they got rid of her body. And in my head, again, I'm like, this is very, I know what you did last summer for me. Did
they search that river?
I mean, I do not know the answer to that. The Ohio River is a pretty big river and pretty fast moving. Mm-hmm. So this came up years later. I just don't understand how you can be at a party and someone dies and the first reaction is, shoot, we should get rid of the body. And then everyone else in the room goes, good idea.
Right. I mean, like, crowd mentality is something to study on its own. I mean, the story of Kitty Genovese. Do you know that story?
No.
So for those of you that don't know, Kitty Genovese was a female living in New York, I believe. And she's outside for whatever reason. She gets dragged into an alley and she's raped. And it's summer or something and everybody...
I do know this.
Yes. See, people don't know the name, but they might know the story. So she's screaming for help and everybody hears it. The rapist leaves. He comes back. He assaults her again, screaming. Everybody hears it. She ends up dying. And everyone's like, well, yeah, I heard something. And the police are like, well, why didn't anyone call us? And they're like, basically, because they thought someone else was going to do it.
Well, it's also like, do you remember the case, I don't know, back in 2016 or 17, I would say, the college in Pennsylvania, where the kid did, there was hazing, and he did so many shots, he fell down the stairs, and they continued stepping over him the entire night of the party.
Aww.
Then they put his books on him. And said he didn't wake, and they brought him upstairs and, like, put him in bed and, like, put his books on him. And we're like, we have no idea what happened. But, like, the whole frat house was in on it. A bunch of them got in big trouble for it. But my point is, like, I guess it's not the craziest thing.
And here I am. I'm like, this guy's baloney. Like, there's no way. And I'm coming up with all these examples, totally negating what I said.
Yeah, I just don't know, like, maybe in the moment everyone says, yeah, let's, she's already dead, like, what are we gonna do? Which sounds really crass, and I don't mean it to sound as crass as it is. But, like, in the moment, if 20 people in the room are all saying, let's just hide the body, to be the only person that goes, wait? Like, I get why that would be challenging, especially if you're all drunk. But, like, I don't know, the next day not call 911 and be like, listen.
And you're also saying that 8 years later, or give or take, not one person at this house party had a guilty conscience and came forward and said, hey, like, I have some information.
Which, I mean, I guess crazier things have happened, Jay Wilds.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, I will say, I want to believe that something happened to her accidentally and they hid the body. More than they did this on purpose.
I don't know. I feel like she was just in a state that would make her very vulnerable to someone with a sinister idea.
But do you think it's a stranger or her friends?
Stranger.
Okay. I'm saying if it's her friends, I hope it was something happened and we just hid the body. But you think somewhere going, driving home, it was a kind of opportunity and someone just picked her up?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think it could be anything, truthfully.
And I think I'm there because I don't have, like, a lot to back what I'm saying.
Right. I can tell you, I can say without shadow of a doubt, I don't think she left her life.
I can say that, too.
I can say I do not think she committed suicide.
Yeah, I don't think that either.
So that leaves me on... Either she was so drunk, she wandered into the woods and buried herself.
Yeah. My eyebrows are raised just like yours right now.
Right. Like, I mean, that's my thing. Like, even if she overdosed or she did something, someone else has to be involved because no one ever found her body.
Correct.
I don't think her boyfriend was involved. I'll say that. I don't think her boyfriend. I think that, like, he actually did. And can you imagine the guilt he must feel, though? Like, he's not going to go out with his girlfriend because he wants to watch the NBA game. And it's the night she disappears.
Yeah. Yeah, to some degree, he must have.
I don't know. So, you know, there's a lot of weird things with Lauren's case that I actually didn't get into. Like, the guy with the truck, there's another convict that has a truck that's similar, but he passed the polygraph. Like, I don't even want to go down those rabbit holes. So I think they're so... I think that it's really easy to lose sight of what is important in this case, if that makes sense. Like, I think that...
Sure.
You know, to talk about a convict that passed a polygraph, like, okay, he passed a polygraph and police aren't investigating him. Police are, however, not ruling out the friend group.
I don't know.
That means more to me.
I don't know that you can really rule anybody out.
That's fair. And, like, we also didn't talk about the fact that, like, it could have been her heart condition.
But I also still feel like if she had left the apartment, started walking, had an episode of some sort, it would have happened right then and there. She would have been easily found. There's only so far she could have gone. You don't have an episode and go hide yourself.
And I'll say also that I think that Corey, after he threw up and went to bed from his head injuries, probably did go to bed and probably wasn't involved.
Yeah. I actually forgot about him, but yeah.
You know, and like, I think about the fact that Lauren went back into Jay's apartment. Well, I don't know who else was there. He was the last person to see her alive. The fact that he didn't walk her home really rubs me the wrong way.
Well, not to stereotype, but I don't think that guys are really gentlemanly in college.
Okay, well, let me say this. Jessica, this is to you. If you're ever out somewhere at 4 a.m. and you're at a guy's house and you're leaving and he does not offer to walk you home, you call your roommates and someone better walk with you.
Or your cousin Melissa's going to order you an Uber.
Yeah, for real. Like, I just don't understand the not walking her home thing. Especially when she has no shoes and no phone. Like, good luck.
I think that's the way college kids think, though.
Oh, my goodness. It just terrifies me, you know? Like, this poor girl has no shoes, no phone, no purse, no keys... Which is because they're in an alley.
They're pretty much scattered around town at this point.
And you're just going to, like, send her off and be like, good luck. Like, you can't, he couldn't even say, text me when you get home, because she had no phone.
Yeah, my girlfriends are more of the ones that have been like, make sure that you text me so I know that you got home safe. Any guy friends that I had in college did not say anything like that. They're like, all right, see you tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's because they're not worried about getting killed.
They're not like, thinking seriously about that. Yeah.
That's why I paused with Jay. Like, I just don't understand the whole logic. And maybe you're right. Maybe he's just young and stupid.
Yep. That's what I think.
I don't like any of it.
Listen, if he wanted something additional from her, just hypothetically, like if it was sex or... He tried to make the moves on her. She's barely able to stand up. She has bruises that she doesn't even know where she got it from. He would not have had to struggle. It wouldn't have been worth killing her for. And she quite likely wouldn't have remembered the incident, sadly.
Right. And so when we were watching the episode and we stopped at the end of it, my husband goes, that guy did it. The one apartment she went to, he tried to sleep with her and she rejected him and it got a little out of control and he hit her body. And I was like, I'm not bringing that up in my podcast. I'm not doing it because no one else ever thought that.
And then Amy comes along.
And then you just said it. He's going to be so excited that you thought of it too.
Him and I, we get each other. No, but seriously, like I can't see that being plausible either because of the state she was in. She would not have had the ability to fight back. Therefore, he wouldn't need to seriously assault her physically.
And I mean, I hope that's not what happened. You know, I don't need these poor parents to add anything else to their potential grief. You know, yes. This is just us talking through theories, just us talking through what could have happened. But, I mean, college boys are dumb. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, I just don't hear enough to convince me that there would have been any rhyme, reason, motive, or it would have been worth throwing their future away for to have harmed her. I kind of think it was a sad, opportunistic crime.
But do you think people are thinking they're throwing their future away when they do something like that? I know that's a really sidebar conversation, but like, think about like Brock Turner. He didn't throw anything away.
Okay, sidebar, because I have a lot to say about that, and I'm not going to do that.
I respect that. If you guys don't know, you should just go Google the Brock Turner case, and then you should go write a letter to the judge and told him he should go home because it was a mistake. And you can use as many bad words in the letter if you'd like to.
End of conversation about that. That's where I land, Melissa. Ding, ding.
Everyone else, tell us what you think. I know this is a pretty hot topic one, so I'd love to hear your thoughts. Yes, I know I left out some of the theories, but they're so outlandish to me, I wanted to narrow it down, and I'm already almost an hour, so.
All right, guys, I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Anyone, tell me if you agree with me. Am I nuts?
Yes, you are nuts. We love you anyway.
Thanks, I love you too.
All right, so we have lots of good stuff coming your way. I'll just tell you now, we are going to record and Ask Me Anything this week because we've gotten quite a few emails recently with questions, and we're going to drop one soon. Just as bonus content, we want you guys to, you know, get some of your stuff answered. So, and if you haven't, go join our Patreon. That is so much fun.
Yes, it is. Yay.
That's all I have.
All right. Awesome. Well, we'll see you same time, same place next week.
All right.
Bye. Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.
Hey guys, my name is Rashad Jones, and I am the host of Blood and Fire Water Podcast, a podcast where we shoot tequila and chase it with a case of murder. Some cases may have been covered in other podcasts before, and that's okay. Allow us to just guide you back down that rabbit hole as we re-examine the people, the places, and the things about your favorite cases. You can reach out to us on Instagram at Blood and Fire Water Podcast and Twitter at BFW Pod Squad. If you got a case you want to suggest, shoot an email to bloodandfirewater@gmail.com. Blood and Firewater Podcast does contain explicit language and graphic content not suitable for all ages, so listener's discretion is advised. Stay alert and stay alive.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university, online. That's a degree better. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.